Today on Rockin' the Suburbs!
Dennis Wilson says, Brian Wilson is the Beach Boys. He is all of it, period. We're nothing, he's everything.
Okay, we're back for the final section. I feel pretty good about it. How are you feeling about it, Nick?
I feel good about it, but I also feel like we now we get to the tougher part of the story. And yeah. I think what we're trying to do, at least what I'm trying to do, and some of this has been my own personal discovery process, I will say, not really until a year or so ago did I really listen to much past the Smile era, ever.
Right.
I knew a few of the songs, but I never listened to the albums. I have spent a lot of time listening to all the albums that came out from 67 through like the late 70s into right. the early 80s. And then I'm just like, then I stop. I'm like, I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, after.
But what I thought we would do is...
Just one real quick. So my way that I listen to the later era, the sort of era we're going to be talking about, is I bought what's called the Good Vibrations CD set many, many, many years ago. And that's, and it kind of took the best songs from each album. I never knew what album they were from. Like, I knew they were from this sort of 67, late 60s, like 68, 69, 70, 71, 72, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And I knew the songs, but I didn't know which album they were on. And then as part of this, I went back and kind of listened like to the album. There's some good songs on there. If I wrote some of those songs, I'd be like, wow. You can hear, like I was saying before, you can hear the bell ring. It just doesn't ring with that Christmas and glory and all the sort of, you know. But there's good songs in there.
It's like there's a flicker. It's yeah. It's like a candle that's flickering in the wind.
Yeah. So anyway.
It's like a candle in the wind.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but like that's how I listen to. And there was some stuff I really like. And let's probably what we'll do with this, we'll say, this is the good stuff, right?
Yeah.
This is
the
stuff
we're going to kind of go through. Like I picked out like three or four albums in the late period. We'll just talk briefly about them okay. and play a song so you can hear some different stuff. It's all there in the streamings. If you want to go investigate, go for it. Like I've said to Mike, there's maybe two albums that I can kind of actually listen to and enjoy all the way through, but it's a bit of a struggle. And there are a lot of reasons for that, and we'll talk about it. But I think this is really intended just for those who are probably like me, who just ignored this material forever, to see if there's anything you might be interested in and something you might want to go back to, especially since Brian has just passed. It's probably worth sort of looking right. into this. And what you do see, to the extent that anyone cares, is that like in the albums through the 60s and up to like 77, you start to hear more from Carl and Dennis
right.
and even Al writing, Bruce yeah. Johnston even wrote. So they all have to step in.
They're to get not, a full album.
To get albums out. They're yeah. not Brian. They're not geniuses. But and some of them, I would argue that Carl and Dennis do start to, they do produce some good stuff yeah. as the years go on. But it's not Brian.
It's
and
not,
that's been, that's the whole issue. And in fact, I just want to read this one quote before we start.
Okay.
So this is from 1971. Dennis Wilson says, Brian Wilson is the Beach Boys. He is all of it, period. We're nothing. He's everything. And this is like 3 years after Brian had kind of gone into pretty much seclusion and the band still wants to go on. And Dennis is like, look, we know, we get it. We're going to do our best. But like without Brian, we're not operating with right. all the cylinders.
Like if Brian never showed up, we wouldn't be talking about this group of musicians.
Right.
They would be lost to history.
Yeah.
Oddly, Dennis has some really good songs.
He does indeed.
I mean, there's like three or four that are really good. One is great.
Yeah.
I would say one is great.
We'll play that for sure.
I know
sure.
we both agree on that one. Let's go pick yeah. some songs yeah, let's play them and give folks a taste.
Like I said, I'll start with it. I'm not going to talk about every album. I think I got like four here, and each of them has a song that's worth talking about. But I guess the next album that's halfway decent to good
is Sunflower, that comes out in 1970. The band had left Capitol. They're now on Reprise. They have a new label. They're trying to introduce themselves as contemporary and album-oriented group, get with the program of 1970s music. Of course, Brian is retreated from full-time leadership. It's got lots of songs from Carl Dennis, Bruce, and Al. They're all in there on Sunflower. It's one of the most democratically crafted Beach Boys albums. You can decide whether that's a good thing. Some people don't like democracy, and in terms of songwriting, maybe that's the truth here.
You know, there's the famous, I can't remember where it came from, they said, but a band is a benign dictatorship. The best bands are a benign dictatorship.
This is what happens when it's the exact opposite of that. Brian still contributed a couple of standout tracks. I mean, he's got the song The Whole World, I think, is a pretty decent song. There's Cool Cool Water, which was another Smile Session thing that they sort of reworked with that. It got decent reviews, but again, it just, and there had been two or three albums before. So from after post Smile, they put out Friends in 2020, which, and by the all way, of those bombed. Friends is a good record too.
Friends is probably the best of, from my view, that's right. The best of album wise. And there's some really good songs. Maybe what we'll do is we'll make a little playlist.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, we have. In fact, I do have a playlist already made. So
we'll have a little playlist and we'll publish that. So instead of us going through all the songs, we'll go through a couple though. I do, and then the one we're going to talk about with Sunflower, I think, is the best Beach Boys song post
for sure. Yeah, I mean, but again, like, so they are not, everything's bombing commercially. They're not in the zeitgeist of the times. They're not seen as cool anymore. It got decent hits. It went to number. So Sunflower got to number 151. It was the lowest charting Beach Boys album to that point. And they were actually, when they put out Sunflower, there was a lot of optimism. Brian was involved. We got a new sound. We got a new record label. And it was a bomb.
Yeah.
It's since been, you know, there's been sort of a reappraisal of Sunflower as one of their better works. But, you know, it does have a little bit more cohesion than other things, but, you know, your results may vary. But the one thing we agree on, that Mike and I agree on, of this album is the song Forever by Dennis Wilson.
Yeah.
Which is his breakout, you know. To a certain extent, when Dennis started putting songs out, people were like, where did this come from? And I guess Dennis had in the background been kind of learning piano, listening to what Brian does, and kind of just developing, you know, because he had the stereotype. He's the party boy. He's the good looking one. He's the drummer, you know, all the stuff.
He was the one involved with Manson.
I debated whether we should have a whole podcast about Manson, but we will not.
Just FYI, we decided not to go into that because it's just kind of
Google, like, if you want to watch one of the terrible movies about it. You know, you never.
It's silly.
But this song is a fabulous standout.
If every word I said could make you laugh, I'd talk forever, forever, my love. I asked the sky just what we had, it shone forever. If the song I sing,
yeah, so, and you can hear that song is kind of more like almost like an open moon, right? I mean,
right,
it's like,
right.
And I know I'm kind of go on about like how Brian was great at having, you know, multiple things going on. A great song doesn't require those things. This is an example of that. This is a very simple song, simple chord structure, but it's just executed fantastically. It does benefit from the great backing vocals that really help really bring the song a little bit more to the completed. But it's really a fantastic song. And I think this is an example of what Dennis has some other songs. And,
it's a beautiful song. And, you know, I think Dennis's voice, which we had never heard other than as a part of the six part, you know, five part harmonies, is a really interesting, soulful, it's deep, really aching. And yeah, you can feel, and I think that's, again, why it works. When the Beach Boys work, it's when it impacts you emotionally, and this song certainly does, without a doubt. The next one I want to talk about is the next album that came out. It's called Surf's Up. It's from 1971. What happened is, after Sunflower bombed, they get hooked up with this guy, Jack Riley, who is basically a radio DJ. He was a big fan. And I love this part of the story. I had to include this. But he met Brian in 1969 at Brian's health food store called the Radiant Radish. He got interested in health food. He didn't really eat health food. He was more into burgers and burgers and burgers and burgers and steaks.
And sundaes. And
everything else. But he did actually open this store, and if you go online, you can see photos of it, and this is 100% true. It was only open when Brian felt like showing up. He'd show up in his bathrobe.
Literally in his bathrobe.
In bathrobe and just be there. So that's where he met Jack Riley, and Jack Riley kind of said, like, hey, I can get the Beach Boys back into, I can get you popular again. I can get you to be hip with the kids because I'm a radio DJ, you know. He was a bit of a charlatan, this guy. And he wrote this whole memo that he presented to the BAM, which is like, here's what you guys need to do to become cool again. So Surf's Up is this conscious effort to reestablish their artistic credibility, you know, with the sort of changing tides of music. You know, there's environmental, social, political. There's a song, a terrible, terrible song. One of the great things about these later albums is if you're willing to, there are some high highs and there are some lows
I would beg to differ with the high highs. There's some okay stuff.
Fairly up highs, you know, whatever. You know, agree.
I'm more critical than Nick in general.
I like some of the what I call it great no, but there's some good stuff.
Right.
Well, we can agree on there's some good stuff. But there are some things that are just
terrible,
abominable, and yeah. Student demonstration time.
Which is why we're spending all the time talking about it.
But I think, again, I think this is a part of the Beach Boys story that a lot of people don't know. And if you're interested, it's fascinating. I've spent hours and hours looking at this stuff. It's just an interesting story. The music isn't always there, but it is, you know, there hasn't been a great documentary really made about this later period. It kind of ends at Smile, the biopic sort of, you know, but so much crazy was going on. And the fact that Mike Love, of all people, wrote a song called Student Demonstration Time, you just have to listen to it. We're not going to play it here.
No, you don't have to listen to it. It
is just terrible. Brian did contribute three tracks. Most notably was the long-lost Smile centerpiece, Surf's Up. One of my all-time favorite songs, my favorite Beach Boys song.
A diamond necklace played the pawn, hand in hand, song drummed along, whoa.
There is also there is a Brian song called Till I Die that is a disturbingly sad, depressing song where Brian basically talks about the state of his mind in 1971. I'm floating like a cork on the ocean. It's devastating. It's a devastating song, but it is Brian trying to like express himself, and I think the results are actually pretty good. Is it a great song? No. In 1970, they have to do another album. Surf's Up actually did fairly well. It did pretty well. It charted at like 55. So for the Beach Boys, that was better. It had some critical acclaim. What is happening so much in this period is, how do we get Brian out of bed and get him to write some music? What's a little known fact is that the contract with Warner Reprise was that Brian was supposed to be contributing 70% of the songs. He never got close to that.
Right.
But they had to put something on there, right? So they decide the way to get Brian out of bed is to move the whole band and their families to Holland, to some, not even to like Amsterdam, to some town outside of Amsterdam. We're just going to decamp there. We're going to record there. But wait, there's more.
I know.
There's more. This blows my mind. So they had identified a recording studio that existed. It was in a barn in Baumbrugge, the Netherlands. And the band went in and decided, like, okay, this is a studio, but this is not good enough. We want our home studio, our brother record studio.
It's a disaster.
They say, go back to LA, disassemble the whole thing, put it in shipping carts, put it over the, fly it over the ocean and reassemble it here because we're going to record this album.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
So anyways, and I could just tell you, millions of dollars got sunk into this, right? To create an album that I sort of think is okay and Mike thinks is terrible, millions and millions of dollars were spent. Just worth saying.
I mean, what I find really disturbing about this latter era is the constant going back, if we could just get Brian to do something, like the number of people who do that is really depressing.
Yeah.
That really...
The techniques, the tactics.
Like everybody trying to get the meal ticket again, a cheap meal ticket of riding Brian's coattails when he clearly wasn't well. Clearly, this is a person who's not well.
Yeah.
Not just he's having a bad day or he's had a bad period. This is years of this.
Yeah.
I mean, and it gets worse. I mean,
does get worse.
And it gets...
It's pretty bad at this point. But
it's bad here and it gets worse.
It gets worse.
I mean, we can talk about it. I mean, a lot has been said. But I think what's the most horrific part of it is the human nature of, like, always people trying to get something out of him, which started from the get-go. I mean, he lived most of his life with people trying to get stuff out of him, put him on the road, have him do this, have him do that, and we'll just have another meal ticket. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, I know.
It doesn't feel like anybody... I am sure Carl and... I mean, Dennis was...
He had his own problems.
Carl is probably the only one and trying to do something for him. But, I mean, you there's only so much you can do for somebody if they're going to go off and do something. I mean, and there just wasn't enough people around him who gave a damn for Brian, really. I mean, when I look at and I see the story, all I see over and over again with Brian is somebody trying to use him, and it makes me sad.
Yeah, no,
it's just the ugly side of humanity. It is the ugly side of music. It is, and it's very, and I think the reason that you can say that there hasn't been a documentary made on this because it's an ugly, ugly story.
Right. But it's a true story.
It is. Know, I mean, there's truth and getting the money to make a documentary for it are two different things.
Yeah,
right. So.
Yeah, I mean, but again, it's you're 100% right. I agree with all of that. And I do think there's worth sort of mentioning, though, that I think our society has not become more enlightened about most things. But for mental illness, you can say we've gotten slightly better about mental illness than we were in 1973. Yeah. And I think there was a notion, and we talked about this earlier, from the other guys in the band and people in the family, that what Brian needed was just a kick in the pants and a project to work on. Hey, we'll send him to Holland. He won't be around all his drug dealers. He won't be in his bed. He'll be forced to do something. That's all he needs. He'll be fine. That was absolutely not. It was the last thing he needed. He didn't want to get on the plane. He actually showed up at the airport and left a couple of times, but they finally got him there.
He had no business doing any of this. Yeah. He should have been like, for
he,
as much
he
as
he needed treatment,
for as much as he gave, for as much as he gave all the people around him, the little that he got back is depressing.
Yeah, it's just taking and taking.
I mean, it's just the ugly side of humanity, and it's very clear. And, it went on. I mean, I mentioned it in the memoriam. You saw him 2016, 2017 timeframe. I did as well. It was not pleasant. I've heard many people talk about it. You can just, the deer in the headlights and the whole thing. And you're like, I heard somebody say he liked doing it. I'm like,
hard to know.
Yeah. Hard to know. It just that he didn't seem to like it when I saw him.
Right.
He just seemed like he was there watching it go on.
Yeah.
I think there was probably moments he liked it, but I mean, you know, we watched him walk out to get on his bus and he just wasn't there. Yeah, I mean, it can't be, a person who's suffering, it can't be good to put them on the road and they wake up in a new place every day.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it was, like I said, a lot of...
I mean, it is hard on people who are perfectly well-adjusted.
Right. I don't even like going on a trip for a weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like,
I gotta pack stuff.
I'm one of the worst homebodies I know. I mean, I'm like, you couldn't drag me on something like that.
Well, but, I think that's what's so tragic. Everyone wanted something for Brian. Some people might have had good intentions. Most didn't seem to have good intentions. In the end, the choices they made were often the worst choices possible. And this Holland choice was terrible. Brian didn't want to go. He gets there. He starts working on this fairy tale group of songs called Mount Vernon Fairway, which is named after the corner outside his house. It's a spoken word thing. There's music. It's weird. It's disturbing.
Kind.
But ironically enough,
I couldn't get through it.
I've only listened to pieces of it.
I mean, but,
eventually they put it on an EP as part of the
this
album.
This is garbage.
The weird thing is that the one song that sort of saved this album, and some people don't like it, ironically enough, the song is Sail on Sailor.
It's a good song.
Was a Brian song from a couple of years ago that he wrote with, of all people, Van Dyke Parks. And it was sort of in the vault. And when Holland, when they came back from Holland and handed the master over to Warner, they said, this needs some, you got to put something else on that. And that's right. When they went back and threw Sail on Sailor to it, which is arguably the most popular song that comes out of this album. They still play it to this day.
Yeah.
It's a decent little song, but it's just a weird sort of coda to the Holland story. After Holland comes out, Brian goes into the worst part of his seclusion, where he is literally in bed from like 74 to 76. The family brings in Dr. Eugene Landy. This guy did have a doctorate in psychology, but he was a quack. He had these dictatorial methods. He put a lock on the refrigerator. He didn't let Brian out and let anyone talk to him. Some people say he actually sort of saved his life because Brian might have overdosed. He was in very
bad shape. Maybe.
But he does come. He comes back because the band needs him. They got to put a new album out, and there's this whole campaign. Brian is back. Brian is back. What Brian puts out during that period is the material on this album, Love You, which is something that this is literally like Brian alone in the studio with synthesizers, drum machines, and pretty much all on his own. He recorded the vocals. And so it's actually kind of amazing that in this period he's able to like do something like that, considering the state he was in. It's super personal, and it's like an insight. And I was telling Mike earlier, one of the issues with when Brian starts writing his own lyrics, because he had worked with collaborators so long, you suddenly realize what he's actually thinking. And some of what he's thinking is disturbing, bizarre. There's a song about Johnny Carson. It's just about how much he loves Johnny Carson. It's interesting because he talks about how they make Johnny Carson like do the show every night. And I kind of think there's overtones like that they're using Johnny Carson the way he's being used. There's a song about the solar system that sounds like a children's song. There's a song about a roller skating girl that's really disturbing. There's a song about his kids. It's called I Want to Pick You Up. It's odd. A really cool, interesting, fun song. Ding Dang. Have you ever listened to Ding Dang?
No. No,
see,
I don't need to stick my hand on the fire. I don't need to stick my hand in the poo to know I don't want. That
I actually, on. I kind of enjoy Ding Dang. I think it's an interesting song.
Ugh.
But it gets to a sort of the thing I got to say about Ding Dang, because I have to bring up Shortening Bread. Brian went through a period in the 70s where he became obsessed with this. It's sort of a classic American folk song that goes many years back called Shortening Bread. And he would play it all the time, nonstop. And Ding Dang is sort of a version of the Shortening Bread piano, like put to a different song.
What we need.
He would actually record Shortening Bread later, and it did end up on an album in 1979. It ended up. But again, just an insight into his mindset. But a lot of people have looked at
Love You. And I mean, the musical, it is sort of like, it is kind of, and this is probably why I don't like it as much. Like it's sort of like an indie album. It's like a bedroom album. It's like oddball synth pop. It baffled, as you can imagine, it baffled everyone when it came out.
Again, I think what upsets me is the whole sort of somebody else wants somebody out. This sort of going back to flogging a dead horse sort of thing of abusing him, which makes me sort of angry, you know? I mean, it just feels like,
well, you should,
you see him at this time and you see him like playing and he's not even cognizant of what he's doing. You know, there's clips of from that era and you know, you're like, man, he's just not even playing, you know, he's sort of propped up.
And he was like, engaged in this Love You project however it happened, this is the statement he wanted to make. And he did it all. He worked. It wasn't like he wasn't working. He worked very hard on this. His voice was bad because of all the smoking and the cocaine and everything else. So it's not great. But it was, critics loved it. Patti Smith wrote a whole poem about it. It at the time, in 1977, the band was sort of like, okay. In fact, he wanted to put it out as a solo album, and the band being as they were, they're like, we got to put this out as Beach Boys. They're hardly, Alan and Mike are like hardly on this at all. They still got to put something out under the Beach Boys. In fact, it would have been better to put it out as a solo album because it's so Brian.
But it doesn't fulfill the contract. I'm sure that's a huge...
Right.
I'm
they had sure to fulfill the contract.
I mean, they wouldn't be the first band to put some garbage out to fill a contract. I mean, let's be honest.
Oh, no, for sure. And, and it went out and it... Obviously, audiences were like, what was this? It got to 53, which I find incredible that it got that high. Got to 53. And the reason it got that high was because... And just to backtrack a little bit, in 74, they put out Endless Summer, which was the... Capitol Records saying, like, wanting to get into the nostalgia craze because American Graffiti had come out and they put out this really great double album of hits, and that was sort of what spawned this whole new generation of kids getting into the early, it's all the early pre-Pet Sounds songs, a lot of the best ones.
Right.
It was a number one, and again. It was a number one across the world because those songs are great.
I mean, that was... not that old, but I remember like it was like a thing. And
it was huge. The Beach Boys went and they were filling stadiums for their live act because they had transitioned from a band trying to make music to their own sort of nostalgia act.
They're probably one of the first rock and roll nostalgia act.
Think so. I mean, I think, you know, because they were still making music like this, which...
I mean, because the Stones were touring and Paul McCartney was touring, but they were basically playing new stuff, right? I mean, they weren't...
And the Beach Boys did continue to play new stuff live through this period, but it got less and less, especially when Endless Summer became a hit. They realized that was where the money's coming from, play the hits. But anyway, just to tie up Mike's favorite album, The Beach Boys Love You, 1977, I recommend you give it a listen. Mike is taking no responsibility for this. I will take responsibility. You can talk to me. I think it's interesting. I don't know whether it's good. It's interesting.
I'm sure there's remnants of what Brian was, you know, but the problem is it's not. We wouldn't be talking about it if it wasn't for all the other stuff.
Oh, well, for sure.
When I look at the latter area, it's just hard for me to painful for me to listen to because all I hear is just abuse.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think you could take that attitude. You can also take well, some of these are sort of a triumph over extreme adversity too, that anything got put out. And so, yes, it doesn't scale the heights.
It feels like somebody like trying to get that last lottery ticket out of them.
Possibly.
That's what it feels like. I mean,
no, but
somebody could feel differently and that's perfectly reasonable. And I mean, I know, and you're much more like, I'll listen to it because I want to see if I can find this little nugget. I'm like, it's not a nugget. No. it's just crap.
Well, interesting, you know, and it's interesting. But Brian himself in 1998. Now again, is he the most reliable narrator of his own story? No. I don't know. But Brian said of this album, and then we'll end with this. That's when it all happened for me. That's where my heart lies. Love You, Jesus. That's the best album we ever made.
Yeah.
Brian said it. But anyway, that was in 1998, though. That was after he had sort of recovered. So just to end, we're going to end the story now. Because there's one sort of career resurgence that Brian has that actually happens in 2004,
where he starts working with this band called the Wondermints, who he had seen play somewhere in L.A. and were playing Beach Boys songs very creditably. He was interested in having them as his backing band. So they became his backing band because Brian was touring as a solo artist. You know, this is, if you've seen the movie, he got married. His wife Belinda helped him a lot, get sort of back into music. Eugene Landy was long gone.
I mean,
gone.
At least he looked healthy.
He looked healthier. He seemed to be leading a healthier lifestyle. How much he loved performing, open question. But he did go back with this band, the Wondermints, and literally you can watch a clip where the main dude in that band had all the Smile Session tapes digitized. And he's just pulling, Brian's sitting there next to him in the computer, and he's pulling them up. He's like, does this go here? Does this go there? Do we move this? And with digital technology instead of scissors.
Right, and you can do it very quickly.
Right, and so Brian was basically able, with the help of this band, to sort of to put Smile into a workable form.
Right.
They called it Brian Wilson Presents Smile. It came out in 2004. And, you know, Brian says this was my original vision. Who knows, you know, whatever, right. But it's close enough. It did get, I remember when it came out, it was a huge deal. There was a lot of press.
I remember it being ecstatic
about it. He went back on tour. He did a performance at the Royal Albert Hall. You can also find it on YouTube where they did Smile back to front. This version sounds great. The band sounds great.
The
band Brian sounds like Brian. It's okay sometimes, sometimes not.
But the band was really, really good.
Right.
Really
but I good. Think it did. And I think it meant a lot to Brian to sort of say, I have finally revisited this.
I think
I can finally get some closure on this.
There's something about the Smile and him completing it and having it out there and having it be done and not this thing is albatross over him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think
it tormented him, really.
Yeah. I mean, the same way.
And not only did it torment to him, but like Beach Boys fans would never let it go. There's a hardcore group of Beach Boys fans who've been with the band the whole time, even through the terrible stuff. And there was constant speculation in fan groups and whatever, and zines, like, you know, Smile is a lost masterpiece. Can you put together your own Smile? There was bootlegs of it, and it was just like, it was always there. Brian right. wanted to escape it, but he could not escape
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm glad it became not a thing anymore for him. You know, I mean, he clearly wanted it to be great, and it clearly, look, if people enjoy it, yay, good on them. I mean, it's fine.
Well, I mean, we talked about this before we started recording. I was very excited in 2004. I bought the Brian Wilson Presents Smile. I thought it was pretty good, but it's not the Beach Boys. It's just not.
Yeah.
And so, but a few years, like 7 years later, so in 2011, people were saying, great, Brian put this back together. He's finally, you know, getting the acclaim he deserves for the Smile Project. But there was a clamoring for, well, can we hear something using the original Beach Boys tracks and tapes?
Right.
And so Brian was involved with this project. I'm not sure exactly how much he was involved. Obviously, producers and other folks were they basically took the template from Brian Wilson Presents Smile and they made a version that they called the Smile Sessions. So if you get the Smile Sessions CD, it's expensive if you can find it online these days.
Yeah,
you can sort of hear the album. There's 19 songs, and you can kind of hear what at least Brian thinks and others think is sort of what Smile would have been like as an album. I actually really do like that. I've listened to it a lot. I do enjoy listening to it. It's got moments that don't sound quite right. It was a lot of reconstruction, you know, and so it's not really Smile, but it's as close as we're ever going to get. I mean, I think the Smile Sessions is as close as we'll ever get to it.
I don't think it was ever really a thing, right?
Well, it was made almost like it became another thing.
It just never became an album. It never became a completed work. You know, artists throughout history chase something that's supposed to be their magnum opus, and it just never materializes, and it just never was what they thought it was.
I mean,
usually the artists that have that have the one great thing. They have something, and they're trying to get back to that again.
I mean, I think the good news for Brian, though, is as tragic as his story is, I think it did help him quite a bit to be able to kind of, that the world had kind of said, okay, we have heard Smile. We think it's great. You have finished this project. You were, you know, the work just couldn't be appreciated back in the day. Now we can actually appreciate it in full. So I think it's a nice sort of ending to Brian's story. I mean, he does continue to tour, and we talked about how difficult it can be to, he would, whether he wanted to tour or not, he was doing it. So he was out there doing it. And he was playing these songs. And I think he was, if anything, we can say anything he was happy about. He was happy that Smile finally came out in way or another. And I think that's a nice way to kind of end the story.
Yeah. Oh, man. That was that was a great conversation. That was really good. This has been...
Stay tuned for part three, the underground basement tapes. Nick talks about Love You for 2 hours. And Mike is forced to sit in a corner and listen.
Crap! So, anyway, my friend, thank you so much and putting together all the notes. I think the reason the Beach Boys story is so... We're still talking about it because it has this insane arc.
Right.
Right? There's no other story that has the insane arc like this.
You know, with the Beach Boys, there's this... Because we're talking about a progression up and then a cliff. And then they dive and free fall over this cliff. And they sort of...
Not only that, it's like the jump up was incredibly fast.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's like out of nowhere, you're like... Little Deuce Coupe, and then it's like
those insane roller coasters they build now that I would never go on. It's like it's a straight vertical up and a straight vertical down.
There's nothing quite like that story. I don't think. All right. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Well, we'll turn it over to Patrick to end this, and we'll talk to you. We'll be back with something else soon. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
See ya.
All right. That, folks, is the conclusion of Mike and Nick's portion of Beach Boys Week, and I just can't thank them enough for the excellent work on this. They have such a great chemistry when you listen to them chat, and really appreciate all the work that those guys put in for this. So thank you again. And if you keep your ears tuned to the podcast, you're going to hear those guys again very soon coming up. Talking about another American band. So you're going to want to listen for that. So stay tuned every day to Rock in the Suburbs. We heard Nick there basically summing up part of the Beach Boys story by saying there was a amazing ascendancy and then all of a sudden a dive and a free fall off the cliff, you know, after the collapse of Smile. And everything that happened around that period. And obviously you heard the guys talking about what Brian was going through and all the people trying to get something off Brian. But what I did was, as a little sidebar, and I'm enjoying doing these little sidebars, it may be something we have to add on to other podcasts that we do, depending on if the situation is correct. But what I did was I listed out all the records that came out after Smile, the Beach Boys' original studio records, from 1967's Wild Honey all the way through 1989's Still Cruisin'. And then I searched out 10 different websites or fan sites that had ranked every Beach Boys album from worst to first. I wanted to see how many of these later period albums made it into these or where they fell on these lists, I should say. And then I assigned, if it made it into the top 10, I assigned 1 point to the album. I awarded 1 point to the album. And if it made it into the top 5, I awarded 2 points for the album. None of the sites that I looked at had any of these albums as number one. Here are some of the sites I used. Brooklyn Vegan, well-known indie blog, Spin Magazine, Ultimate Classic Rock website, The Return of Rock website, The Album of the Year website, ClassicRockHistory.com, Paste, well-known magazine, something called The Daily Vault that looked pretty interesting, and then two Beach Boys fan sites that I came across tracking some info down through Reddit. So that's 10 sites altogether, and the points criteria were as previously stated. So what happened? Well, there were a number of albums that none of them were in the top 10 of any of these rankings. And that was the album 2020, which came out in 69. Carl and the Passions, So Tough. Not sure if that was talked about. That did not make any of the list. 15 Big Ones, the record they made right before Beach Boys Love You. The album M.I.U., which came out in 78. Also, the L.A. Beach Boys album, the Light album, did not make it. Keeping the Summer Alive from 1980 did not make it. The Beach Boys album from 1985, even though I was working at a record store at that point, and I know it sold a ton of copies, did not make it. And Still Cruisin' from 1989 did not make it. That leaves six records. Three records got five points each, and that was Friends, which came out in 1968, and I believe at one point Brian spoke highly of that one. The Beach Boys Love You earned 5 points in my system. Holland earned 5 points. Then we go up to Wild Honey, which earned 7 points. Wild Honey from 1967. Surf's Up came in second place with 12 points. And topping the list, Sunflower. That's right, Sunflower, with 15 points. So that's my little sidebar today. And I really hope everybody enjoyed Beach Boys Week. I know I did. I had a ton of fun editing it and just listening to it. And, you know, going back really was a pleasurable thing to do. And so happy to be able to contribute my own little piece to it in the form of these little sidebars at the end, or N bars, whatever you want to call them, nomenclature. So with all that said, we'll go out with a track from Sunflower. We already heard one lovely song, Forever, written by Dennis Wilson. But we will go out with Cool Cool Water, the final track on the record, which I think Nick mentioned earlier. That it was probably germinated sometime during the Smile sessions, but that's what we'll play out with. Thanks again, Nick Scalera, Mike Wagner. I think if you go out on the socials and you dig around for Nick and Mike, you'll find that they published their top 10 Beach Boys songs, their favorites. And you can go and find that out there on their socials if you look them up. And I'm sure if you want to, you can find them. Okay, with that, we want everybody to have a nice weekend. We'll be back next week with some interesting stuff. You may hear Mike and Nick's voice again next week. You never know. With that, I want to wish everyone a happy weekend. Happy Beach Boys listening to all. And we will talk to you guys next week.
Everyone wanted something for Brian. Some people might have had good intentions. Most didn't seem to have good intentions. In the end, the choices they made were often the worst choices.